welcome to the Non-Breaking Space Show. From Austin, Texas, I'm the Internet's Christopher Schmidt. And on today's show, we talk with Jason Pometel about variable fonts and the future of web topography. Jason is the author of Responsive Topography, a book from O'Reilly Media, and he recently won one of the best dev awards for his web topography talk at the annual CSS Dev Conference in 2017 in New Orleans. Before we get started, some things I'd like you to know. The UX Design Newsletter is a weekly list of articles, tutorials, and inspiration handpicked by yours truly. You can sign up for it at uxdesignnewsletter.com and have the best links of the week sent to your email box. Speaking of newsletters, you can set it and forget it with the Non-Breaking Space Show newsletter. Whenever a new show is ready, you can be notified right away in your inbox by signing up at newsletter.nonbreakingspace.tv. You can find show notes and links discussed for this episode at nonbreakingspace.tv. And be sure to follow me, Christopher, on Twitter at Telject, T-E-L-E-J-E-C-T. As always, I thank you for telling others about Non-Breaking Space. Now, on with the show.
How was your DevConf experience? We didn't get to talk much.
It was pretty awesome. I am not going to lie. Yeah. Talks were great. Yeah. I had an amazing time. And it was like homecoming. Yeah. I love web conferences. I really do. It's just like seeing tons of old friends.
So I guess you go to a lot. I guess you go to other conferences. I guess the Cal would be one. I guess you go to, or is that, or like a designer designing conference? Is that? I don't know what other conferences you go to. I mean, I know there's other conferences. You know, I'm not just believer of that they don't exist or anything. But just, what other conferences in your circle?
So I have spoken at How Design before. And like that one because it's such a non-digital audience, which is kind of cool. The other sort of like non-webby stuff are like the type conferences I've been speaking at the last few years. Like TypeCon is like the big US focused type and type design and typography conference. And then A-Type-I is the big international one. And they were actually both in North America within like 2 weeks this year. And so like I spoke in Boston and then 2 weeks later I was in Montreal for the week, like teaching a workshop and giving a talk. And it's like every type designer that you could ever imagine. You know, I was like hanging out with a guy that designed Proxima Nova all week. And you know, it's like, it's just Mark. You know, it's just I had this total like nerd fanboy moment. Like Matthew Carter was there, and you know, he's like a living type design deity. And you know, he's just like hanging out, listening to all the talks, and like he was in my talk, and I saw him in the airport and he said hi. And I was like, I'm such a nerd. But I love that. I love that that always happens. You know, if it's a web conference, you know, it's like a totally different audience. So, you know, I can give talks that are totally design focused and like, here's what you can do with the cool tech, but like, it's really about your typography. Or I can, you know, like at CSS Dev Conference, it was as much focused on like, hey, like, look at the unbelievably hard problems this solves. And look at like how hard this is hitting the industry right now. And everybody's super excited about it and they want to see code. They want to see the examples and like they get it. Like they know why this is such a big deal and they're like psyched about it. Just like a nice breadth of audiences at some of the different events.
Well, yeah. Well, I think that's like winning, right? That's like you're able to take your love and your knowledge of typefaces and go to different spheres. Like, I don't know, that's crazy to term a word, but like different industries or different niches and stuff.
Yeah, that's totally it. And And I mean, even going back to when I wrote my book, it was addressing these three different audiences of print designers that know typography, web designers that know the web but don't know typography, and developers who need to know how to implement it well. And so it's like I'm still having those like separate kinds of conversations.
Right. But yeah, so your book, if I remember your talk, just responsive web topography, you know, it's published by O'Reilly.
Yep.
Right? Okay. Yeah, and I enjoyed the book, and just a lot of great tips for web topography that, you know, I didn't know about. And also, I felt like it was also like, you know, you spoke at Artifact Conference, which is, you know, a conference that you worked with Jennifer Robinson with for multiple device designs, and you did a great web topography talk for response design. I was like, oh, this is, like, it's just like drilling down into like the nuts and bolts of great topography and so forth. So that was awesome. So, so no one's got a book yet. Are you going to do a sequel updated book?
I don't think I'm going to, because Rich Rutter just put out a really great book, and Bram Stein from Typekit just put out a really great book. So, I guess the maybe in my mind, like I really wasn't thinking about it, but both of these books came out before variable fonts was really a thing. And the more that I'm talking about them and thinking about them and working with them, the more I'm realizing that this potentially changes way more than just like the basics. I think it will change what typography is, because it actually makes typography itself more dynamic and reactive to user context. And that's something we've never, ever been able to do before. And so I think those are some really exciting developments, and that someone needs to write about. And that might be book worthy.
Okay. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, let's just set the table, I guess, like what, you know, the first time I've really kind of heard about the variable fonts was like when you submitted your topic for CSS.conf. I was like, oh, okay, that sounds interesting. And then congratulations, you won like a best of for CSS.conf, which is a really hard thing to do because it's like, you have to get submit. Oh, there's your
pen. I am so proud of this.
So,
I just like carry like, around. You have to get, you know.
Shit. I mean, it's actually a working pencil. It's a giant number two pencil. So it's, so if you ever get into a Scantron fight,
I'm locked in.
But yeah, so just in case people don't know, like we've never been to CSS.conf, but we do call for session ideas, and those get voted, double blind voting. And then the winners, which are like few out of hundreds, get picked, like dozens. And then once you're there at the conference, we actually have like voting during the conference. And so there's like top six get best up. And so you were like this year in 2019, you're like you're picked for your variable fonts session. So, and even though the set that I don't know is like, it's a hard thing or bad thing, but like, as a winner, you have to like give a presentation again for people who miss it. So it's like, it's really tough, I know. But I didn't get a chance to see it because you were in a different room. I was like stationed in the ballroom for the whole entire conference. So I missed out your talk, but I went through your slides. But in this case, like just for me and for other people like me, can you just explain what our variable fonts are? And
So one of the best explanations that I can think of is, if you think about, so a typeface and a font. A typeface is a family of designs that encompasses different weights and variants of the styling of letters. So I'm deliberately trying to not like fall into like using these words themselves, but if you are, if you're using Franklin Gothic and you want Franklin Gothic bold, Franklin Gothic extra heavy, Franklin Gothic italic, those are all the weights and variants of the typeface. The font refers to that specific weight or variant. It's actually a separate file. And so that's the key thing here is for a really large family of like a typeface, like the typeface family for Open Sans has 18 or 26 different weights and variants. So it's one typeface, but there's, let's say, 26 different files. And so...
So you would say like those 26 weights and variances, there are each 26 fonts within the typeface?
Right, exactly. Yes. Fair to say? So the term font is actually, you're referring to a piece of software, which is that individual file that you install on your computer or you serve on your website. And that is what renders Franklin Gothic bold italic on the user screen. And when you use them on the web, you have to load each one of those things separately. So each one is its own HTTP request. It's its own file size, you know, on and on and on. And so what has tended to happen over the years is that we use a smaller number of them so that we don't slow down the user experience. And that means we can be perhaps a little less expressive in the typography put on the screen. The sort of revolutionary thing about a variable font is it is one font that acts like many, so that you contain all of the different widths, weights, variants, slant even, and a few other things that we can sort of dig into, all in a single file. Now, that file is a little bit bigger than like a single font, like weight or variant, but not as big as maybe three or four. So when you think of how much more variety you could get, literally thousands of combinations with a single file instead of three or four combinations and that's it. So that's what's really remarkable about the file format itself and then its application on the web, because it is all tied into CSS, means we can load that single file and use CSS to create just, you know, wonderfully expressive stuff, and really without the kinds of constraints that we've been living with since 2009 when at FontFace first became a thing.
Yeah, I remember when I used to talk about Microsoft Images before we had source set and sizes attributes, you know, I was like, I'd go through, okay, this is how we can do different types of responsive treatments. And like, and one of them I would always recite, you know, very briefly was like responsive typography. And one of the solutions I kind of like, you know, just kind of pooh-poohed was that using a, you know, a typeface, right? And then, because then you could just say, hey, well, if I just want this font, which is a thin font, so I can use that for smaller devices. But if I grow, if it's like a large desktop display, I can still go to the typeface and use a, you know, a thicker, you know, a heavier weight for it. And it would still be in the same, you know, family, right. And it'd still be great. However, I like kind of like, well, like you're downloading like 12 font files and those aren't cheap in terms of performance hits. And so that's why I like the concept is just one large file, but it's also just like a little bit of a bigger hit, but I think it's great. So do you know how the savings come about by using this one file versus the technical aspect?
It's really pretty fascinating. So the way this works is what's stored in that font is the outline of the normal instance of that character. And then every other instance is stored just in the delta of those points along the outline of the letter. So it's only storing the difference for this weight to that one. And, move this point this far. So it's a tiny, you know, it's a fraction of the amount of data, and the savings are sort of algorithmic or logarithmic rather, meaning the more variations you have, the more savings you get. So, you know, if you're really just trying to replicate four different widths or weights of something, it's a little better, but the truth is you can actually represent 30 or 50 different ones, and you have even more savings over the aggregate total there every time. Right. And
the more you buy, the more you save.
It is actually that. And what's really cool is that once you, like just today, Adobe, or maybe it was yesterday, Adobe announced that in addition to variable font support shipping this week in Photoshop and Illustrator, they also released several variable fonts. They're working on Source Sans. They're working on Minion and Myriad and Acumen. So there's a bunch of things to play around with. And uncompressed in a TrueType format, Source Sans was like 83K. And once they actually wrap it in a WAF wrapper, you're going to get even better compression. It might even be as little as half that or less. So now we're getting, we actually could get into the same territory of a single font file. You know, if it's a well, you know, there's a bunch of caveats here because it's a brand new format. But if it's a well-constructed font, you will get better and better optimization with it. And so this has width, weight, and slant in one file. And, you know, it's only 83K. So, you know, bring that down to maybe 40 or 45K. That's not so different from any other single weight of a font. And yet you have thousands of variations. And it's Source Sans. I mean, it's like it's the new Arial. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, it's a really nice, usable, readable typeface. It happens, you know, it and Open Sans are incredibly common these days. But that's okay. It's still better than those typefaces. And it still gives you more expressive capabilities.
So I mean, you mentioned a couple of file formats there. So I just want to just go with them. If you, maybe you could go, like, so you mentioned TrueType format, which has been around forever. WAF. I'm not sure. I never really said it out loud until now. So you explained that, and that's WAF, yes. I guess. And then I guess variable fonts are, you know, just assume it, like, is a separate new file format, right?
Sort of. So as okay. In everything, it depends how you want to answer that. But
right, which is my favorite phrase.
So technically, what we're referring to is an evolution of the OpenType font format. So when OpenType was introduced, that was the first font file format that would work on both Mac and Windows and other operating systems too. But that was the big primary goal, was to make it work on both of those platforms. And that that OpenType format is that is the basis for a lot of the advanced features that we use on the web, but it has to be put in a wrapper. And WAF, which I should have looked this up before, I think it's like the Web Open Font Format or something like that. And that became the one, the first time we had a font format, file format that was supported across all platforms and browsers. And so previous to that, you would need to load a TrueType format, an EOT format for Windows, an SVG format for old iPhones and some other devices, and then WAF for like the newer browsers.
And, right, I remember the gymnastics we had to do for the
Yep. base. Yeah, so like you have to have them in the right order, and like it's ridiculous. So that's all now giving way to the WAF format, and WAF 2 is one with greater compression, but not that has less support. WAF, you can, you know, it covers like 95 or 96% or something like that of the devices on the web. So basically you could get away with serving probably like just TrueType and WAF, or just EOT and WAF, depending on what, how far back you want browser support. Generally speaking, you know, we're really across everything that's modern. It's just WAF or WAF 2, and WAF 2 is where you see the biggest file savings, kind of across the board. So, you know, these aren't, you know, particularly scientific, but you know, if I were looking at an evolving design from a friend of mine, the TrueType format for, this is from CJ Dunn. He's got this Lovette font that he's typeface that he's designing, and the TrueType format is 45K. The WAF 2 format is 9. Oh, and, wow. And that's not a complete character set, but just to give you an idea of the savings, It's pretty tremendous. So when you see stuff out there, like Source Sans is only available in TrueType format at the moment. So we can play, but you can't necessarily use it everywhere. But as soon as they also release that with WAF and WAF 2, you've got massive coverage and you can kind of use them pretty much everywhere. And you get, you know, this huge file savings to boot.
And so a variable font is just like a designation within WAF 2 or WAF?
Well, it's in what it's wrapped in. So in the original like TrueType or OpenType font file, the wrapper kind of doesn't matter. So WAF and WAF 2 is really just a way to compress it more. And within that one file, they still have, you can still have what we refer to as named instances of bold regular, bold thin, bold extra wide, you know, all of those kinds of things. So the browser and the operating system can still work with them just like multiple fonts. So the operating system will still know what to do with that. And the cool thing is macOS High Sierra that just shipped and the latest release of Windows 10, which just shipped like this week, both have operating system support for variable fonts. And Windows 10 actually ships with Bondschrift, which is their first variable font, which is a really nice sans serif, a little reminiscent of DIN, and it's like 26K. So, you know, it's still, you know, a lot of people, well, the first thing they'll ask is, well, like, what's the file size like if you're doing all this stuff? And, you know, we can see like an operating system quality typeface at 26K with, it's only got one axis of variation, which is weight. So you can make it really thin to, you know, to really heavy, but that's still pretty remarkable and it's small. And if you think about how complete that typeface must be to ship as part of the OS, that should tell you, you know, that's a pretty robust typeface.
Right. Yeah. Definitely. A lot of the so I just want to go, but just step back. Let's make sure I understand this correctly. And so I don't want to be the, like, you know, be in the form. So a variable font, just, it doesn't really matter what file format is in, it just how it's delivered. So I guess have a, I guess that's trying to wrap my head around, like if I want to create a variable font, do I just have a tool that can export the variable font? And then I could just say, hey, it's a variable font that I want to export as WAF 2. Is that
right? Sort of. I mean, you do, okay. Like there's a bunch of work that you have to do in a font creation program, like Glyphs app is one of the ones that's starting to ship with support for creating variable fonts. So I probably should pause for a second and actually give a little bit more history of its announcement and evolution. And that'll maybe put this in more understandable context. This format was only announced a year ago. And so this was in September of 2016, at ATypeI, which is a big international type and typography conference. It was Microsoft, Google, Apple, and Adobe all got up and they announced, here, this is this brand new thing. And, you know, like nobody in the room knew this was coming. It was like this massive surprise. And it was totally kind of blew everybody's mind because they were showing this stuff in a browser. It works. And there have been attempts at this kind of thing before. If you go back to the 90s, there were multiple master fonts. There was also an attempt from Apple with TrueType GX. And it has never really caught on, but it didn't have the web as like the giant gorilla to swing things by the tail and say like, this really has to happen. So it was announced then and there was no tooling yet. Like everything was kind of duct taped together to try and figure out how to design these things, how to export them, how to optimize them, how to see if they actually work, because you know, there was no support in the operating system yet, so you couldn't look at it there. But within 3 weeks, Miles Maxfield at Apple had a build of WebKit for me that I was able to take on stage at a conference, you know, like 3 weeks after this was announced, where I could actually show them in action. So we've actually been able to work with them in the browser much longer than anyone's been able to actually do anything on the operating system side. So with like a native application. And that was really pretty awesome to be able to be a part of that and then work with the CSS working group and all that. So you know, flash forward a year, browser support is much better. I mean, I'll talk more about that in a minute, but the ability for us, like we can actually go and find some type designers out there right now that are selling variable fonts. There are some software packages for that font designers, type designers are using to actually create them. You know, they don't have to use all of these like crazy Python tools that people write. Like if you want to know where Python's a big deal, it's in type design. Like those are the nerdiest people you will ever meet. I'm not kidding. I love it. I love type conferences. So they like now there's programs that can make them. And if you, you know, have a typeface that you've designed, you can export it. You know, if you've designed it in the right way, you can sort of export it with this format, and then you can use another tool to like wrap it in the WAF wrapper to compress it and say, okay, now it's a variable font. And the browser, you know, with the way we would use it on the web, you're just using CSS, and either it works or it doesn't, which is, you know, the beautiful thing about CSS. So if it really is a variable font, then it will behave exactly the way you want. You can use these, the intent is that you'll be able to use these named things and say, well, I want bold, and it will just show you bold. And then if there are other sort of keywords that have been set up in it, like extra light or compressed or condensed, then it will jump to that width. Otherwise, you can use font variation settings. So font-variation-settings, and then these sort of special keyword value syntax of weight would be like quotation mark, WGHT, close quotation mark, space, and a number between, you know, 1 and 1,000. You know, I want weight. And that's not every typeface will support every weight. It's up to the designer, but you can uncover that. And actually, it's going to get easier with a tool that Lawrence Penny's working on. He's at LORP, L-O-R-P, on Twitter. But he's the guy that created the Axis Praxis website, which is axis-praxis.org. And that website you can go to in the current shipping version of Chrome or Safari, and you can actually play with variable fonts in the browser. He's got a whole bunch of them there. It's a whole UI that you can, and it will show you what all the axes are, and you can see what the numbers are that you can play around with. So you can then just like copy that into your CSS, and like off you go. It's amazing. And what's even more amazing to me is that we're living in this little Wild West where we get to shape what's going on in the CSS working group. We get to influence what the browser vendors are doing and what type designers are producing by creating the demand for this. Like we want it because it solves all these problems for us on the web and it lets us do all these crazy cool things. So, you know, it's like with Grid, the more you talk about it, the more energy there is behind it, the more we speak about it and evangelize it and use it, the more we get. And there's a huge incentive for Google and Adobe and Microsoft in particular to get this going, and Monotype too with their service. They're all working on tooling to you know, convert all their existing library of typefaces over to this format. And just the bandwidth savings alone for the type services, if you're only serving one small file instead of 37, and you know, Google serves something like 26 billion instances of Open Sans every week. I mean, every week. Imagine, you know, that's to 20 million different websites. So imagine if that's 20 million websites that are all serving one file instead of all of these different variations. Just the, you know, because of the nature of browser caching, you know, all coming from the same network, their bandwidth bill is going to drop like a stone. I mean, it's, you know, it's amazing what could come from that. So I think, you know, in a lot of different directions, there's a lot of reasons why this is going to be really cool, and it's going to work this time.
Yeah, I think you're right with like the beast of the web or the motivation of the web, and I think also responsible design, this multi-device world that we live in. It's just a great motivator. And then also like it's really smart, like, you know, with Git and GitHub, like just being able to save changes as Delta to reserve, you know, like sizes low. I mean, Google has Google Fonts, and you know, Apple has a great rich history of typefaces, and Windows does too. So it's just like they all know, like, you know, the importance of or the downside of different web fonts too. So I can understand, like, if you put those things in context, you can understand like why they went from like almost 0 to 100% within a year. It's like, it's amazing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, and like, you know, we had this period in March where all of a sudden, I think it was March or May, where we went from like 0 to like 80% or 70-something% support for CSS Grid, like across the board. And you know, we have Rachel Andrew and Jen Simmons to thank for that. Like, they're just so unbelievable, and they're like, they just were so so driven and so consistent in the message that they were delivering. And, you know, right. You think about like what Jen talks about with layout. I mean, she's such a good designer. She's like such a good thinker about this stuff. And the parallel is, you know, we can do all these awesome things with layout. Now we can do all these awesome things with typography to go with all of these awesome ideas about layout. And it's all within, you know, it's all controllable in CSS. So like one of the things that I've been talking about this year, and actually something that I showed at CSS Dev Conference, was actually building some typographic tools into the CMS. So we could actually get the designer back in the room when content is being published and allow for typesetting a headline. You know, if you have a combination of like viewport units to let things scale, and a little bit of clever work in, you know, in your Drupal or WordPress or Craft website, you could actually add in some tools that allow people to create a pull quote that actually has, you know, different size words to, like, you know, create that more interesting kind of editorial style layout. And, you know, couple that with the different things that Jen shows, that like now we can do magazine layout on the web in a really interesting way, in a way that's right for the medium. We're still respecting the web. You know, I don't think we're going against its grain in any way, you know, to borrow from Frank Camaro. But this is the biggest thing to me since responsive design. I mean, like the amount of freedom it gives us as designers. And that's to say nothing of accessibility. This was something I hadn't really thought that much about until I started messing around. One of the axes of variation, and I should say, like, when I refer to an axis of variation, I mean width or weight or slant, like any way you can manipulate the shape of this letter. One of those that is often used is optical size, which is really remarkable. So when the type gets physically smaller, when it was in metal type, they would actually expand the shapes a little bit to make it more legible at a physically small size. So the bowl of a lowercase b would actually be physically bigger at 6 point in metal type than it was at 12 or 18. And that was to aid legibility, especially, you know, as it gets physically smaller, the printing is going to be less precise. But that's even on a high-res screen on your phone, that makes a big difference. So if we have optical sizing enabled, as the type gets smaller, it's still going to stay legible. And the another one of these axes that I find really interesting is grade, which thickens the stroke of the characters without changing the physical space that it occupies. And so what's really remarkable about that is you could think about someone with low vision You know, they don't have really strong detail. One of the things that helps them is stronger contrast between foreground and background. So as an aid in accessibility, if they could toggle a heavier grade of that text, they could read a lot more easily. And the same thing would be true in a low light situation. So it might not work very well yet, but there's a web API for tying into the ambient light sensor on a phone. So imagine that we could actually build that into the website so that when you're viewing it on a phone and it's dim, and you could certainly do this in an app, like if you like the Medium app could do this, and they could actually make that text slightly easier to read, slightly stronger contrast as the ambient light gets lower. So that's what I mean about typography itself actually changing from what anything that we could do before. So we've got like amazing stuff we can do in just design vocabulary. We've got like crazy fast downloads. You know, our performance is going to be much better. And then on top of that, we can do all this stuff to make it easier for people to read and also make it easier to read on a small device because another axis is width. So we could make letters slightly narrower on a phone and get more letters per line and have a little bit easier rhythm for us, you know, as a human. Really short lines of text kind of make it sort of choppy, but slightly longer lines make the reading experience more comfortable. So all of us that are, you know, trying to like catch up on the, you know, on the news while we're standing in line, you actually, or if you're sitting on the couch, you could actually read a book on your phone, and it would be a much more comfortable reading experience if you have that slightly better line length, and it wouldn't sacrifice the overall readability.
I mean, I think that Amazon's trying to do a lot of work with making their Kindle easier to read, and that like Herbal Font would go a long way.
It would.
Yeah. Problem. So, yeah. So I'm a, you know, I'm a developer, an engineer. I love the promise of Herbal Fonts. What's the browser support look like? How can I get my hands on them? What do I need to do?
So, High Sierra and iOS 11 shipped with full support in Safari. So we have active support for variable fonts there. Chrome 62 shipped on Tuesday of this week, on the 17th. So I don't know when this airs, but so it's out now. So you don't need an experimental flag there. I know Firefox, the Firefox team is working on it. I don't know what their plans are for shipping it. Nudge. So like that would be awesome. And I know that the Edge team is perhaps even days away from, this is completely unconfirmed. I know they're working on it. It's quite possible that there will be, you know, like a nightly build or something like that that will have support for them pretty soon. So we've got operating system support in currently shipping Mac and Windows. We've got browser support in Safari and Chrome, and we've got active development in Firefox and Edge. So it's getting pretty good, and I suspect that we're, you know, a few months away, you know, by spring, I'm guessing, like we'll have official full support in like all of the shipping major browsers. And and you can go, Adobe tweeted out some stuff about Source Sans and a few other experimental ones that they have. A lot of these things are hosted on GitHub. So you can actually go to GitHub and search for variable fonts, and you'll find a whole bunch that you can play with. And then if you go to the Access Praxis website, Lawrence Penny's got a bunch of stuff there. I've got, I can actually give you, we can add a link maybe in the show notes to go on my site. I've got a bunch of demo pages that people can like find in a GitHub repo, and they link to variable fonts that I host. So you can play around with stuff that way. I'm working on getting some tutorials together. So, you know, give people a little bit more to go on when they want to learn about it.
Okay. Great. That's awesome. That's good. Like, so it sounds like, wow, we just went from like a year and a half and announcing it. It's going to go to full-fledged production.
It's really wild. I mean, like I've given a talk about variable fonts 8 or 9 or 10 times this year, and not once, even when it's been less than 2 weeks between talks, have I not had things to update. I mean, it's moving so quickly. And I mean, it's just like the support of, people like Miles, people like Lawrence, Peter Constable at Microsoft. I'm trying to think of some of the other people that have just been so influential with this. I know I'm leaving off a lot of names, but Adobe launched it, like they did it. I mean, it's in Photoshop, it's in Illustrator. They've got type that ships with it and installs with it, so you can play around with it right there. It's pretty amazing how quickly this is becoming a reality.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, and like you said, you couple that with like CSS Grid and with viewport unit sizing, it's just going to be amazing.
Yeah.
What we can do easily, and it's like pretty much like we're throwing out everything we learned and having fun.
Yeah, again. And you could even throw CSS variables in the mix there for sizing your typography. There's some amazing stuff that people are doing there. And you can use at support to make sure that it's scoped to only be served to sites that can, to browsers that can actually handle it. So you really could put it into production today safely.
Okay. So it'd be like at support, verbal fonts.
Is that what has worked best is tie it into something specific like font variation settings, optical size. Like that's one that is, it's not width, it's not weight. If the browser understands this, and I have some of that in the sample stuff that I put up, so we can make sure. And people are always welcome to like tweet me and say that they need me to explain something to them, and I will do it.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll link to your site definitely in the show notes, as well as I think we'll link to your slides and see this stuff help too. So that's good. So,
yeah. Awesome. And cool. I think like I gave the talk 2 weeks earlier at Web Unleashed, and as much as I wish that I had a video from CSS Dev Conference, that other one should be live soon. And I'll have that on my site as well, so people can check that out. And like the version of the slides that I gave at CSS Dev Conference is there on my site. So those two things together can be like the peanut butter and chocolate for folks.
Great, awesome. Well, this has been great. Is there anything else that we need to know or to take advantage of variable fonts or what? Anything else you're excited about?
Well, it's really just now starting to really play and starting to think through what that future is. Now that it's becoming this reality, I had a friend get in touch with me from a pretty large corporation who's thinking about a custom typeface and they want a recommendation. And, right away, the first thing I thought of is I need to introduce them to someone who can do this work and do a variable font for them. And we can talk about what different axes of variation they should have. It's a healthcare related company, so accessibility is a big deal, especially with different, age of populations and stuff. So we can, sort of hit the ground running with all of these ideas in developing this typeface for this company and really set them up to be, one of the first brands to really embrace this and use it across every media. All their apps, all the web stuff, even so far as like in-store signage and like all this other stuff for what they do. And the possibilities there, especially if you think about it being a corporate standard, they need to deploy it across every employee's desktop. The IT management is also a lot simpler. So, this isn't a tomorrow thing. It's a soon thing, but that's how it starts. And I think it's a pretty awesome future, and I can't wait to start mixing all this stuff together on some editorial designs for the web too.
Awesome. Yeah. I think editorial, like, I think that's what it's inspired too by your looking at your slides, like the editorial approaches to it is really awesome. And then my commission earlier also mixing with the CMS for people to you know, pick a variation and access a variation if I'm using the phrase right.
Yeah, exactly.
It's awesome. Thank you so much for your time today. How can people get a hold of you online if they want to ask you follow-up questions?
I am at jpamental, JPAMENTAL, on basically any social network that you could think of, except Snapchat, because I'm too dumb and old to use it. But Twitter, Instagram, if you want pictures of my awesome dogs, Tristan and Tilly, or sunrises at Turner Reservoir. That's what most people know me for. Tweet me, mention me, ask me questions. I love nothing more than to help other people get started with this stuff.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, sure thing. My pleasure.